Welcome to the Minerals and Royalties Podcast, the home of CEOs and investors in the minerals and royalties space.
Hey guys, this is Tim Powell from the Minerals and Royalties Authority. I recently sat down with Scott Steger, managing partner of Santa Fe Energy, a Midland Basin-focused ground game aggregator that launched in January 2023. During the episode, Scott walks through his experience in the Midland Basin with shops like Garden Energy and Stronghold Resource Partners, and how he's translating his relationships and experience over the years to execute buying minerals for Santa Fe. Let's jump into the episode and hear more of what Scott had to say.
All right, Scott, good afternoon and welcome onto the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Appreciate it, Tim. I've been looking forward to it. Now we talked about me coming on, I guess it was early this year, but so glad to finally have connected and to be on.
You bet. So we'll get into kind of your career and really what y'all have been doing in the Midland Basin recently, and then previously what you and your partners did with SRP. But before that, let's just paint a little context for everyone. So where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? And you got into oil and gas banking originally, I believe. So let's just kind of go down memory lane, and then we'll jump into what you guys are doing now.
Yeah. So I grew up, I feel like this always throws people off guard. I grew up in Southeast Florida, in Martin County, Florida. I say the county just because it'll kind of come full circle. One of the biggest areas we currently buy minerals in is Martin County, Texas. So it's always funny to see on drilling info when Martin County, Florida comes up too. And so, yeah, growing up, was a super competitive guy, played all the sports, ran track, cross country, was second in the state in tennis in high school. So kind of just gives you a good background of, you know, very competitive. And I think that played well into my eventual career path.
By the way, why? I mean, when you look at oil and gas in particular, the amount of talent in tennis is wild. Like, what? You know, I'm not a tennis player. I'm a golfer. I played golf in college. So, you know, I can appreciate high level, you know, Division I athletics and all that. But when you look at the Watt tournament and just some of the guys in the industry and how talented the top tiers are, from what I hear, right? I've never attended Watt. Like Case Van Hoff was a national champion, and you know, you're second in the state in Florida as an amateur. You know, Florida, if I'm not mistaken, has all the major international tennis training academies. So it's a breeding ground for tennis. So that's fairly impressive statement there to say you're second in the state.
No, yeah, Florida was, it was crazy competitive. You know, some of the, we had some of the top, you know, 100 guys in the country, you know, playing in that state tournament. You know, it was probably half and half. Half of those guys would not worry about high school tennis, but the other half would be there. And so it was very, very competitive. So yeah, I mean, I'd say Florida and California, Texas are probably the top three states tennis wise. And I don't know why. I always have heard that Case Van Hoff is good at tennis. I think he played at USC maybe, but so yeah, I need to get out, because I know a few other guys in the mineral space that grew up playing tennis. I need to get out there and play with them.
Well, I digress. So let's get back on track. Yeah. So you grew up in Florida. Where'd you go to school, and then how did you end up navigating towards oil and gas? Because Florida oil and gas, you don't really have those two in the same conversation. I mean, I grew up in New York. Never in a million years was oil and gas on the list for, you know, the career advisor in high school when I'm going to college, right? So how on your radar?
Yeah, so I went to Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. Important for me to kind of stay in the South, still have SEC sports, but a good education. Double majoring in economics and philosophy. So kind of knew I wanted to do kind of finance focus, because economics was the best, closest to finance major you could have at Vandy. So I knew I wanted to get into finance and specifically investment banking, which I think kind of plays into that competitive spirit, the, you know, potential for high earning right away, right out of college. And then more specifically, I first got intrigued by the oil and gas space. I was reading, I can remember it so vividly, you know, articles about Aubrey McClendon at the time. And I think some of them were trying to kind of, you know, pitch, you know, frame him as an enemy. But for me, reading it, just this idea of a wildcatter, you know, somebody that would kind of push his chips all in when he felt the time was right investment wise, was all very exciting, you know. And then, you know, Aubrey had, I remember reading about the wine collection, and obviously some of that was a little too much excess, but still, I think a lot of his characteristics were things that were, you know, to be looked up to. And for me, that's what really just got me interested in the space, got me reading about it, keeping up with it. I think Chesapeake Energy back in high school was my first stock I personally invested in. So yeah, I mean, that just, I've always followed the industry since then and knew that kind of fusing the want to get in investment banking and then oil and gas investment banking would be kind of the perfect mix for me.
Cool. So you land at Scotia Watrous in Houston out of college. You spent a couple of years as an analyst there in the banking division. And then you go on the private sector side. So you move out to Dallas with Aethon, and then you have a stint with Guidant Energy. Talk about those experiences and how you got connected to Dallas. I mean, Aethon's an operator in the Haynesville. Guidant had a minerals arm under Blackstone.
Yeah.
Curious, is that really your first exposure to minerals at that point?
Yeah, it was interesting because, yeah, I joined Guidant right after they had acquired their first kind of foothold in Martin County, Texas, 20,000 net acres from Endeavor. And, you know, we started, I was kind of just running the hedge portfolio, doing all the budgeting and forecasting, doing any valuation work for acquisitions. We ended up buying another 20,000 net leasehold acres on top of the initial acquisition. And I would say halfway through my time there, Blackstone came to us in one of our biweekly meetings and was like, hey, there's a couple operators out there that are really getting aggressive, trying to buy ahead of their own drill bit. You know, we've got all these acres we can buy under. And so we slowly started piecing together a position, mostly to start by just buying, actually 90% plus was just true off the ground deals. And so we, you know, 10 to 20 million every, you know, 6 months is kind of how we started of mineral acquisitions, and then ended up just snowballing. And then kind of ended with one really big deal in Block 36T1 North in Martin County. It was, you know, a few thousand acre acquisition that we bought. So all in, we spent, you know, to over 250 million on minerals and about 800 million on leasehold while I was there. So
and that was Swallowtail, right? Was the royalties vehicle?
Yeah, Swallowtail was the royalties vehicle. Yes,
which ultimately exited to Viper a couple of years ago.
So that big position we bought in 36T1 North, Diamondback buys QEP, which had all that leasehold position. And so it just made a lot of sense for Viper to buy those minerals because it was all under their leasehold at that time. So.
Do you know where you're going to be on October 10th later this year? If your answer is not the Minerals and Royalties Assembly and Awards Dinner, then drop everything you're doing right now and go online to get registered. If you're serious about deal making and networking in the minerals and nano space, then I expect to see you there.
Got it. Yeah. And that kind of sets the table for, you know, your relationships in the middle of the basin. I mean, you guys deployed $1 billion across minerals and leasehold. So talking to a lot of landowners, I think that is really one of the things you're hanging your hat on right now in your new strategy, right? So the next iteration, Stronghold, you were with them for almost 4 years, and they were extremely active in the Midland Basin, in particular through COVID, probably when things got really quiet, one of the only funds really deploying serious capital and getting deals done. So walk through that period and really what your role was at Stronghold. And I know they had the short-term strategy with the portcos, they had the long-term hold vehicles for Stronghold and the long-term vehicle for Elliott. So which entity were you involved in? Were you involved in all of them? Over to you.
Yeah. It's a quick background on Stronghold. So when I first joined, I could tell it was a younger, kind of tech-focused firm. Really exciting. And especially looking back, there's a lot of folks, again, relationship-wise, that I still stay in touch with. And then another point I think worth mentioning is Ryan Turner, one of the co-founders of Stronghold. Obviously, it's a lot of people probably know, had a pretty strong connection with Aubrey McClendon at AEP. Ryan was kind of, at least from my vantage point, kind of right-hand man to Aubrey there. So that really brought kind of everything full circle, you know, meeting this guy that like got to work with the guy that got me into the space, I thought was pretty cool. So yeah, at Stronghold, I spent most of my time on two direct investment vehicles, and they were the largest mineral investments we had at the time. The entity names were Pontiac and Mercury. We had a way of naming a lot of our entities car name. And so this was late 2019. When these two investments first got up and running, largest investor in those entities was Elliott Management, so a large hedge fund out of New York. We had, you know, a few hundred million dollar commitment from Elliott to go out and buy minerals in the Midland Basin. So if you think about that time period, that's just a few months before COVID hits. So here I am kind of being tasked with leading up these two investments, biggest at the firm, really exciting, kind of ready to just crush it. You know, and we do really well in late 19, early 20, buying a bunch of minerals really quickly. And then all of a sudden COVID hits and, you know, oil goes negative. All the potential sellers are just uncertain what to do. You know, they're scared, but they don't know what's going to happen with, like, not just the oil market, but more broadly, you know, will we be alive? It was a weird, weird time, as I'm sure folks on your podcast previously have said. There was from March 2020 through June, I mean, we tried to buy. I mean, we had all this money to go buy stuff and we just couldn't. So at the time I'm thinking, well, you know, for lack of a better term, shit, like, you know, this was our shot and it's going to be tough. But slowly July, August, September, sellers came back into the fold and, you know, they were selling at a much lower commodity price environment. They wanted to at least likely, you know, sell half at the time just to hedge their bets. Who knew what was going to happen? And as you said, Tim, we really didn't have nearly as much competition as there is today. And so we were able to have all this dry powder to really go put the pedal to the metal buying minerals. We really quickly bought a few $100 million of minerals in really two and a half years. And this is all off the ground. We had zero marketed processes. It was amazing. I mean, I think I noted we, at our strongest run rate, we were buying $20 to $25 million of minerals a month off the ground. And so that, it was fun. I mean, I was managing a group of 15 mineral buyers, and then I also had a group of four finance associates who were kind of helping with the valuation. So I was leading this investment. I would kind of describe my role as a head trader, kind of chief operations officer type role, which is really dynamic. You know, we were still Stronghold. It's a big firm, but, you know, this investment was very lean. I mean, it was me, a CFO, and then the folks I just mentioned, the buyers and the associates really, really running the show. So really, really rewarding experience. You know, I think it helped that we had a younger kind of go-getter group. I mean, you know, really proud of it. We ended up, like I said, deploying the full commitment. And I'd say after 2 or 3 years, you could very easily say that the investment probably at least 2x at that time. So that large chunk of capital, getting that greater returns in such a short period was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I've said this on other podcasts. I think going forward, one of the things, if you're an investor looking to put capital work in the mineral space, there's just these windows of opportunity that are going to continue to open and close. And they're not without risk. I mean, that period was a scary, uncertain period that we've never seen before. The opportunity I always reference when I give this example is New Mexico, Delaware, right around this time. And then the drilling moratorium came and there's a lot of uncertainty there. And so these are two very, very good areas in terms of stack pay, great rock, delineated from a technical perspective. And as a result, lots and lots of competition to buy minerals. But in these areas of uncertainty, or these times of uncertainty, all of a sudden, if you take a view and you can go and execute and kind of see through the fog, you come out the other side and you guys did really well in that investment. Nick Verrill at Wing is an example on the New Mexico side who really, you know, went aggressive during that period, got a great exit later on, right? And in a shorter period of time, not only buying at great prices, but just aggregating at a velocity of capital you wouldn't be able to otherwise. So I just think you don't know what that looks like going forward, but those things will continue to happen. And it's just the firms who are well capitalized at the right time with the right team and skill set, and for lack of better terms, kind of sack up and yeah, go for it. I think, you know, kudos to your team for executing on that. And, you know, we'll see what the future holds and what basins and what kind of opportunities based on black swan events and macro get created.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, it's exactly kind of that thought of like, oh, really, the Aubrey McClendon, you know, push the chips all in when you do see that opening, I think, which, yeah, COVID time, right after COVID hit, that was obviously hindsight, especially 2020 there, but that was such a great time, you know, to buy. So
for sure. Okay. So, you know, you and Reed Swanson now are launching Santa Fe Energy. You've been up and running since the beginning of the year. Reed was at SRP as well. You want to give a little background on Reed and kind of how you guys worked together before and why you decided to band together to start a new co?
Yeah, so Reed's a lawyer by trade. Reed was the general counsel at Stronghold. So as you can imagine, you know, Reed had his hand in every investment at Stronghold, just from the kind of legal documentation, negotiation. And so with Pontiac and Mercury being the largest investments at the time, Reed and I worked really, really closely together. I guess one thing to note on one of the entities, Pontiac, that was actually a partnership that Stronghold had with SM Energy, one of the kind of first of its kind, that where we had a heavily negotiated document around, you know, SM would kind of give us certain information about where they were going to drill, and we'd go buy minerals, and then SM could earn some minerals as they drilled wells. So Reed and I worked really closely together on that. As you can imagine, that was a heavily vetted document by both sides, I think 10 total months of negotiations. So we really have a lot of experience kind of in the trenches together. So really just, it made a lot of sense. You know, we're friends, have mutual respect for each other professionally. And I think we have very complementary skill sets. Whereas Reed's able to manage kind of the legal side of things, the fundraising side of things, which frees me up to just do what I love, which is go make money buying minerals and just managing all that process. And so it made sense to start Santa Fe this early this year with him. And we've been fundraising for the last about 7-8 months, you know, and had a great deal of success. And so really excited about, obviously, we've already bought, I think this year, just over 20 million of assets. So for us, you know, really just a team of six right now is we're very happy with that. Hoping to hit the 30 million mark by the end of the year, acquisition wise. So off to a hot start.
And breakdown, I mean, I think SRP was a unique animal. They had a big team, lots of tech, lots of different, you know, we'll call it mineral buying armies on the ground, right? From the teams they backed to, you know, the team you manage, you know, relative to an upstream company, 15 people is not a lot, but 15 people is pretty decent for the mineral space. It's a sizable team.
Yes.
You're now a leaner team of six, but there's nothing more valuable than experience. And so I think through the SRP days, I'm sure that you've picked up some things that really worked, some things that, you know, some learning lessons. What are kind of the key takeaways that you guys really like to implement in what you're doing at Santa Fe with the leaner staff?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, SRP had, I thought I found the secret, and it's not that crazy of an idea, but just fusing this kind of get your hands dirty, off the ground buying approach. So have enough of a team with relationships out there, out in West Texas, but also bring a level of sophistication that I don't think is always there with certain mineral companies. I mean, there are other folks out there, but that has some level of sophistication, but it's really just, you know, for instance, yeah, I mean, my background is, you know, working with guys at Blackstone and Elliott Management, like these very smart guys who can, you know, we can really have a very, very strong discussion around, you know, how to value minerals and how to just be very precise in everything that we do. And so I think, you know, mixing those two approaches and not saying, oh, we need a big fancy private equity company and then we'll be the operator, but just being them both at once, I think is very effective, because one, it allows decision making to happen much quicker, which is one reason we've tried to kind of be very selective about our investor base. Is, you know, we want people who trust us and know that we know what we're doing and we can just go do it. And so I think that kind of operator and kind of sophisticated private equity hybrid approach is something that SRP did really well. You know, Ryan's background, obviously, Turner, SRP's kind of good institutional background as well. And then he was hiring these people, that these mineral buyers that could go out in West Texas and actually go buy the mineral. So we've tried to do the same thing. But as you said, just be a little leaner. One thing I made note of, I think it was very clear at Stronghold at times, was that there were significant diminishing returns, probably once we got to above mineral buyer eight, more than eight buyers, the incremental minerals bought was a lot harder to get, you know, and so our focus so far has been, okay, we have two guys right now that are fully focused here at Santa Fe at buying. I know they're good because I've worked with them over the last 5 or 6 years. I know they have what it takes, that when they make a call, it's a high quality call. I think sometimes, you know, maybe if you have 15 buyers, maybe five of them are making high quality calls, but the other 10 really don't have a good direction yet. And so you really need to be able to, I think, know who your people are, trust your people. And I think that maybe a Stronghold at times, you know, once they got above 10 buyers, the new guys just were not in the right mindset and were not able to be as effective as they could have been. So we're at Santa Fe now, really selective about who we hire and making sure that when they come on, we get them up to speed as quickly as possible and they can go in and execute as quickly as possible.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors. Looking to ramp up deal flow for your minerals and non-op ground game? Since 2019, the Texas Mineral Company has closed on over 120 deals, totaling $110 million in value, with deal sizes ranging from $50K upwards of $5 million. Whether you're looking for white space, permit, duck, PDP, AFE, or wellbore-only deals, the Texas Mineral Company has got you covered. For more information on how to source deal flow from the Texas Mineral Company, please email Toby Martinez at toby@thetexasmineralcompany.com. Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagle Ford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston. If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information. As a leading global energy business advisory firm, Opportune is well positioned to provide world-class technical, financial, and operational capabilities to minerals and royalties companies. Whether it's back office outsourcing, resource and reserve definition, land due diligence and administration, GIS mapping, valuation work, data and system integration, financial reporting, tax advisory, or buy and sell side assistance, Opportune LLP has got you covered. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com. Farmers National Company has oil and gas experts located across the country ready to provide you unmatched convenience and service for your land management needs. Whether you're looking for turnkey management of oil and gas interests or simply looking for an advisor to help you sell or lease your minerals, Farmers National Company has you covered. Learn more about Farmers National Company's team of certified mineral managers, landmen, attorneys, and accountants by going to fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com.
You can afford to be a little more rifle shot, right? You've done about 20 million deals this year. You're not trying to do a couple hundred million. So you mentioned the diminishing returns per mineral buyer right above 8. You can kind of find that happy medium and go kind of with quality over quantity. You know, the thing that, you know, you hear typically is you got to kiss a lot of frogs, turn over a lot of stones in minerals buying on the organic side. The hit rate's 1-3% maybe. When you're dealing with experienced mineral buyers, you see that hit rate go up a bit just because of knowing how to take on certain conversations. And yeah, I'll start with that. Just kind of tactically, you experienced guys are able to convert at a lot higher rates and be more effective as a team.
Absolutely. I mean, I have our top buyer over here, Will. You know, I can hear him usually when he's having calls with people. And I mean, he's just, you can tell he doesn't have to write anything down anymore. It's just like mineral buyer says no, which they always say at first. Did you think about taxes? Did you think about ordinary income versus capital gains? Like boom, 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 boom. Like that list is so efficient. And, you know, I hear it and I'm just like, attaboy, you know. So, you know, like you hit it on the head. I mean, you know, average buyer, maybe you're 1-2% success rate. You know, I'd say Will is probably 3-5%, which is still low, but it's, you know, over 2X, you know, your average guy. Another point is that, you know, our two buyers have, you know, again, 5, 6, 7 years experience with a lot of these owners out in West Texas. And some of them have never sold to us, but they've built a level of trust with them so that when their neighbor might go to sell, we'll say, hey, we know Kyle over who lives next door to you, give him a call. And then you talk, you know, potential seller calls Kyle and Kyle's like, love the guys. They're good by their word. They're going to close. They're going to treat you right, all that. That trust factor and having those, I guess, having our personal brand and then company brand ingrained out there in West Texas as a positive for folks is huge. Because, you know, minerals maybe seem sometimes like there's not much barriers to entry. All you need is a phone and, you know, some phone numbers and you can go call mineral owners. But one big competitive advantage I think we have is that 6-7 years of relationships that, like, I mean, someone can get it, but you're going to have to come in and, you know, spend 6 years to catch up sort of thing. So.
Yeah, I mean, for investors, family offices out there that are listening to this, I mean, I do fundraising as a part of my business for different funds. And I think the challenge a lot of folks are looking for this silver bullet, some special secret sauce that is novel that no one's done yet. And it creates a, you know, a differentiated advantage over everyone else. And that's just, you know, there's tech and information advantages here and there that give you a slight edge, but specifically the Permian, it really does come down to relationships. And it really does come down to just right time, right place, grinding, hanging around the hoop. And I think that's hard to really show in a slide deck or communicate in a conversation. I mean, can you speak to that a little further? Because give some examples, right? So 6 to 7 years of relationships, what does that really mean? I mean, is it multiple sales of a minerals portfolio? Is it the referral to the neighbor? Is it we're not a seller today, but then, you know, my daughter's getting married and now I want to, you know, liquidate some minerals to do a big wedding or buy them a house. I don't know. Like, just like examples. Because it, again, like I said, you know, an investor, sometimes I think all these strategies in the Permian can kind of blend together. And it may be the main differentiator as you look from strategy to strategy is relationships and, of course, track record. Because you can't deny returns. That's always the differentiator across everything else. But speak to that a little bit more, because I think this is really a public service announcement really to investors out there on how to look at these strategies, because it can be tough to differentiate. And it seems so cliche, right? Oh, we have relationships and we're out there grinding. We're on the ground. Okay. Yeah. But break that down a little further. I think it'll be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I guess to start, you know, I think the best relationships are formed and the best trust is formed with someone who's clearly a non-seller. So it's like, I think there was one family, for instance, that Will, our head buyer, and myself have been talking to for years. Never sellers, you know, their asset in particular was undeveloped. So maybe we were offering, I don't know, 20,000 a net royalty acre for the last 3 to 4 years. And then, you know, typical kind of development of an asset, it gets permits. Okay. Everyone's price goes up. So all of a sudden, these clear non-sellers who, I guess to back up, who we've in the last 3 or 4 years gone out, met with them at, you know, in Big Spring, stayed in the Settles Hotel and, you know, had drinks with them and took them to dinner, spent at times 5-6 hours meetings, knowing at least as of that time, they were non-sellers. And so all kind of a long game approach, though. So now we fast forward to permits filed, prices go up, they're getting big offers from a bunch of people, but we were the ones there before all this excitement happened. So they're listening to us first. And so as permits get filed, they're still, you're a little low. Of course, as we get closer to first production, wells get drilled, all that, value goes up as long as oil price stays up or flat or up. And so then we get to a point they always had in the back of their mind. They never told us this till the end, but, you know, 40,000 net royalty acre was their number. And, you know, we thought about it and, you know, probably just above our max, but we hit it. And at that point, I think if you didn't have the relationship and we hit that price, probably what would happen is they'd go shop it. You know, they say, hey, I got 40 from this person, let me get 41. And it's just that tit for tat kind of, you know, get bid up process. But because we had that relationship, you know, this particular family really, they put a lot of value in, you know, the relationship and someone they believed would be true to their word. So they sold to us, or at least one of the family members did. And then from there, it was one of those just dream scenarios, which only probably happens once or twice a year, maybe, where one family member sells, then the others kind of see that they got cash and they're like, wow, that's a lot of money. You know, this feels pretty good that you got this. Maybe I should get it. And so then it just dominoes and it's just like beautiful, beautiful. And so we end up buying the whole family. And really, we can tell them, look, you sold at your highest price right before first production. You know, the whole tax argument, you're getting capital gains tax versus ordinary income. And then I think another point to that is that we always like to give the presentation to a potential seller and explain all of the considerations of why to sell versus why not, and really not approach it from, hey, sell, like you have to sell, but more like, hey, here are the things to think about. And so I think people appreciate that. That's a part of building that relationship. And then from there, you know, this family actually owns even more minerals that we're still trying to buy, but, you know, maybe eventually. But on top of that, we just had a huge owner just got permits. And we don't know this particular guy, but he happens to literally be, I think he's some sort of, he has a working relationship with this family that we bought from. And so we didn't first realize that, but the family ended up with, I think without us even necessarily asking, like just saying, hey, you should listen to these Santa Fe guys' offer. And so this big, you know, $10 plus million owner who would have been almost impossible to buy is now like, we've got his ear, you know, and it's like almost like accelerated relationship with him because of the existing. And it's just that snowball effect. Because another thing to remember is like that area is small. Everyone knows each other sort of thing. So one relationship can actually turn into 2, 3, 4 over time. So
no, I appreciate you walking through that. And how, when you go back to your days at Guidon and all the leasehold you did, I mean, are some of those relationships dating back to those days and translated, you know, from leasehold to minerals and vice versa?
Absolutely. There's a lady, Kathy Buckholz, who we leased. She had 15,000 acres, net mineral acres, in Northwest Martin County. So we leased her after her dad passed. And so she still has 30,000 net royalty acres of minerals. Now, I think she's set cash-wise, never going to sell. But that's just an example of, you know, pretty big player out there that we can call up. And, you know, if we need help with a particular owner that she may know, you know, that's someone that could help us. So.
Okay. Now, what about, you had mentioned you have a relationship with someone, they're a never seller. You know, this woman, Kathy, her father passes away. Let's just say the father was someone who said, I am never selling my minerals ever. I don't care what the price is. I'm never going to sell it. And then he has 3 kids. He passes away and his minerals get passed down. This is always one of the hypothetical scenarios that mineral buyers talk about. You know, I've started to hear this happening more and more because of the great wealth transfer of baby boomers. And it's really started to accelerate. And I think will continue probably for the next decade because yeah. Baby boomers are in their mid 60s, give or take. So they're aging. And, you know, particularly folks who have close to decade long relationships with individuals are starting to see it change firsthand. And you're in the door already. You have a rapport. Do you have any stories around that? And can you attest to that and indeed happening and opening up opportunity going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. Our biggest chunky acquisition when we first were getting Pontiac up and running back in the stronghold days was with a large family who, yeah, it was a big family, you know, 5 kids. There was kind of a matriarch kind of mom who kind of ran the show. We went out and met with the whole family. The mom, I guess, technically hadn't passed away, but she was trying to get ahead of, you know, the mom was never going to sell her minerals. She was in her, you know, mid 80s or something, but she could see, you know, her kids weren't really wanting to manage that. And, you know, we're talking like it was a $30+ million mineral portfolio that the family had. We were going to maybe be able to acquire like a third of it. And so mom could see that the kids, you know, just didn't want to deal with it. And I think mom really wanted to be able to see while she was still alive, the kids kind of reap the benefits of some of that wealth that they had accumulated over the years. And so, man, it was just a clear shift of like, first we reached out to mom and mom's like, I don't want to sell, you know, she's a real firecracker. And then we delved a little deeper, met with the kids, and you could really tell, like, you know, they could use some of the money. And you know, for them individually, it was going to be $3 to $5 million each. I mean, it was a process, but I mean, you hit it on the head. That's some of the most primo opportunities is when we can see that, you know, put the story together family-wise. And okay, mom's never going to sell, but she's got all these kids. Mom, you know, don't you want to see your kids enjoy that wealth while you're alive? You know, pitching that whole angle. You know, it's obviously we're in it to get the asset and win, so to speak. But it is also, I think, a pitch that I would truly advise my family or my, if we had minerals, we don't, but if my family had minerals, my grandma would say, hey, you know, sell some of it today so you can enjoy it. And so, yeah, that exact kind of this younger generation really not caring much about the minerals as much and just wanting cash is always a good angle.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors. Your property is your legacy, so you should only leave it in the hands of a land management company who has a legacy of its own. If you own oil and gas interests or act as a fiduciary for those who do, you can find a long-term partner at Farmers National Company, who since 1929 has taken great pride in helping clients maximize the benefits of property ownership by providing turnkey management services and by working alongside them through generational transfers of specialized assets such as oil and gas interests and farmland. To learn more, visit fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com. Since 2019, the Texas Mineral Company has been a leading ground game broker for minerals and non-op deals, closing over 120 transactions across the Permian, Scoop Stack, Haynesville, Bakken, Powder River Basin, DJ, and Eagleford. With deal sizes ranging from 50K upwards of 5 million and 1.5 NRAs upwards of 3,500 NRAs, the Texas Mineral Company can be flexible on where and how they can source your deal flow. For more information on how your team can work with the Texas Mineral Company, please email Toby Martinez at toby@thetexasmineralcompany.com.
Need energy industry management experience at your fingertips? Opportune LLP, a leading global energy business advisory firm, has the capabilities needed to overcome your minerals and royalties team's technical, operational, and financial challenges. To learn more, search Opportune's podcast E2B, Energy to Business, on Apple and Spotify Podcasts, where Opportune examines emerging financial and technology trends and provides a broad perspective on ways to stay ahead, create opportunities, and execute market strategies. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com.
Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagleford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston. If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information.
And another theme that's starting to play out, and you see waves of this obviously over time, is E&P consolidation. There's been some blockbuster deals announced of late. You know, obviously the Permian Resources acquisition of Earthstone is the latest one. You know, before that, Earthstone acquired Novo, and there's a handful of others. It's interesting from a minerals perspective how these larger acquisitions affect things, because now you could have a private operator that was really kind of drilling out their tier one area, maybe lower in the totem pole for a larger company because there's only so many CapEx dollars, so many rigs. And now all of a sudden your development timing can get pushed out. How have you guys kind of viewed the EMP M&A market and both kind of past live and currently at Santa Fe? How have you dealt with that? And how do you try to manage that? Because no one can really predict it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it always presents opportunity when there's a, you know, things are kind of changing via acquisition. I think we try to take an approach, an operator by operator approach of like, hey, you know, Diamondback only has this many locations left. They're running this many rigs. That implies this many wells left to drill. And so there's this many years of inventory. And so, but as acquisitions happen, obviously that kind of changes the whole calculus. But I think our level of sophistication really helps us there because we're able to kind of, for instance, I think a really good current day example is Ovintiv buying Petro Legacy, Black Swan, because that's a perfect example of maybe Black Swan wasn't the most aggressive as far as wells drilled every year, but now Ovintiv has the asset. And I would tend to argue that is going to drill it quicker, or at least the same density, if not better well density. And so that's an opportunity to kind of immediately quickly analyze it and go kind of hit the ground running and buy under them. Yeah, I think it definitely presents an opportunity always, especially, you know, because I think we've got foundation here at Santa Fe to quickly change the analysis to get an accurate price and go after that new area that's been acquired. So,
yeah, I mean, and I don't know if you guys tend to focus on, you know, permit duck type inventory if you buy white space. I was talking to a family office the other day who was more of a, you know, 5+ year type hold buyer in terms of development timing. And they were saying some of these mergers actually play into their hands because now it's like, oh man, there's this huge pool of inventory in this $10+ billion E&P company. Now there's really no line of sight. This might fall into the 5 to 10 year development bucket. As a result, folks that have minerals funds might be more enticed to sell down a portion or sell it and then redeploy that capital into something that's a little more nearer term so they can get the cash flow. Where do you guys sit on that in terms of kind of development profile and what you guys like to buy? And then just that perspective on the E&P consolidation and it creating different kinds of opportunities to buy.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, to that point, we prefer at least two-thirds of our portfolio, if not more, to be what we'd call near-term development assets, so covered in permits, DUCs, or producing assets. Not that we don't like the undeveloped. I think you need it's almost a necessity to have some mix of the two just to balance the IRR and MOIC thresholds. But you know, the developed, as you allude to, the near-term development stuff reduces that uncertainty around timing of development and well density. You kind of already know most of those things if there's permits on it or DUCs. And so, well, we do like to mix in some undeveloped stuff. I mean, you hit on the head with, you're right. When an acquisition happens, you know, there is a risk that what you own is overlaps with what the operator just acquired. And that operator might have just so much inventory, like maybe a Pioneer, for example, you know, who knows when they're going to go to it, you know, in the next 5 years, maybe, or maybe not. Whereas I would argue Ovintiv acquiring something who I think is kind of running out of Midland Basin inventory is good. Diamondback, I think the same, SM would all be acquirers that I'd be happy they bought something, because it's like, man, they really only have a couple of years of inventory left. So they're probably going to have to drill all this in 5 years. So
it sounds like you got to have a fairly good understanding of all the operators out there and their inventory and where things sit, if they're multi-basin, where the Permian sits and relative to their overall portfolio and their CapEx and drilling plans. And yeah, if speed is important in this game. So if an acquisition happens, maybe there's certain landowners or certain areas you may want to give a call. Maybe there's a way to wiggle something loose, right?
Exactly. You're right. It's all about speed. And yes, it's like speed to the standpoint of like, you know, permit gets filed, like we're calling, you know, 5 minutes later, you know.
For sure.
We also know that there's probably another 20 people calling, but maybe we're faster. So
hence you got to go back to relationships, because listen, let's just say most buyers are going to be within a certain band price wise.
Yeah.
So if you're just getting that first phone call and they're saying, you know, this is a reasonable price and we're willing to give you the shot to do it, I mean, that is worth its weight in gold. So it really, the relationships are paramount at the end of the day.
Yes, yes. Relationships. And then, you know, in those instances too, I think trying to be as creative as possible, because you never know what's going to hit with an owner, you know. I don't know, you know, some idea. Let me buy, obviously, the simple one that most people say is let's sell half. But there's a lot more, you know, sell to me for $30,000 a net royalty acre. And if you think you're about to get permits, well, I'll pay you, you know, $500 an acre per permit if anything gets filed in the next year or something like that. Like some people like that. And, you know, just always trying to think of new angles with people.
Yeah, the earnout structures can be complicated, but it can create alignment with a seller and put them at ease of saying, oh, is this the wrong time to sell? And then everyone kind of wins, right? Because yeah, if you guys are looking to hold this stuff longer term, you know, the serendipity of that will play out in your favor, but you just got to help, you know, the psychology of the seller sometimes. And those earnout structures can do that. Well, for those listening, what are the best ways to collaborate? I know when we've chatted about what you guys are doing, you're selling down portions of your assets along the way and, you know, reinvesting some of that, putting some of the distributions back to investors. So for those listening, I think there might be an opportunity to pick up some interest from you guys, maybe partner on deals. Obviously, you know, investors, family offices out there that may want to partner with you. Just kind of walk through where Santa Fe is today. You'd mentioned you're looking to do about $30 million in acquisitions this year. It's only Midland Basin, correct? Or let's just kind of walk through everything so that if folks can reach out to you in a strategic way, we can get some new relationships going.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So yes, it's predominantly Midland Basin. I'd say 98% Midland Basin. We've done a few deals in the Haynesville, really have tried to, especially with the stuff we're buying, the whole stick in the Midland Basin. And so, yeah, as you said, you know, part of our strategy is to usually try to sell down around 25% of every asset with a shorter term hold, 1 to 3 month hold, and we'll sell down 25%, retain the other 75% and hold it ideally through, you know, start cash flowing it if it's an NTD asset, or even if it's undeveloped, hope, you know, in the next 2 or 3 years, we get it permitted and kind of realize a fuller value over time. I think an advantage of that beyond just kind of simply taking some chips off the table is that we keep good touch points across the space. You know, we obviously try to have really good touch points with off the ground owners, try to have really good touch points with what I would deem top 5% brokers that we work with, but then also with the premium end buyer. So because we're selling down usually around 25% of most assets, you know, we're able to stay in, you know, heavily in touch with these premium end buyers to where we're not going to be that company that like puts our head down for 5 years, buys up a bunch of stuff, and then is like, okay, let's give it to an investment bank and have them sell it. We like kind of staying at the forefront of people's minds, these end buyers, keeping those relationships fresh, you know, and then also, yeah, from a risk standpoint, it helps us mitigate risk over time, which I think, you know, it's not like a, I don't want to say it's an overly complicated strategy, but I think that's what makes it great. Just kind of a simple hybrid, you know, sell down a little bit, hold the majority and, you know, cash flow it over time while maintaining as much, you know, good relationships across the space as possible. So,
okay. Well, great. Well, if there's anything we miss, by all means, Mike's over to you to close it out. But otherwise, I really appreciate you coming on, Scott. It was a good conversation.
Yeah, no, Tim, I just want to say, you know, really appreciate the invite and have appreciated, you know, meeting you. I guess it was when I was first starting Deer Trail back in early 2022.
At that dinner in Dallas, right?
Nice. So I appreciated that invite. It really helped me kick off the company, see a lot of those folks I knew, but it was just helpful to kind of tell them, hey, you know, I'm doing something different. So I think you've filled a very strong need for this space to have more organized business development events like you have. So again, I appreciate it. So
you bet. All right, Scott. We'll appreciate it. We'll see you soon, wherever that may be in person.
Thanks, Tim.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed. The Minerals and Royalties podcast is meant for informational purposes only. Tim Powell and the Minerals and Royalties Authority are not promoting any specific securities or investments, nor are they providing any type of investment advice. If you enjoyed the episode, then I encourage you to tune in more and also check out the Minerals and Royalties Authority YouTube channel. Thanks, and see you next time.